Welcome to the Seahawkers podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Schultz, and today I am joined by my buddy EJ Snyder at Bootleg EJ out on Twitter. He is the co-host of Bootleg Football, and he joins us regularly to talk about the draft. And we had a big event here this past weekend, with the NFL Combine. Just a little bit of an event.
A little tiny thing.
And I wanted to bring you on to talk about it. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm a little tired. We're doing this on a Sunday night, but it's a fantastic event. Was really good this year, as big as ever. And it's just a great weekend for guys like myself to learn more about these players. It's not everything in the evaluation. It's a piece. It's a part. And we'll talk about that. But it's always fun. It's long. There's a lot of it, you know, several hundred players going through the Underwear Olympics at Indianapolis. Lots to learn, lots to go back and check, but fun weekend. So I'm still jazzed, even though we're at the tail end of it.
Hey, we can still be jazzed here throughout these next month and a half or so, because I think the Combine can give you enough content to talk about over the next 6 to 8 weeks anyway. I mean, we're just going to scratch the surface and hit some of the high points, I think. There's just so much to talk about, and it's the reason why I want to start off with maybe the biggest storyline coming out of the Combine, and that's Anthony Richardson. And as a quarterback, putting off the show that he did in terms of the athletic profile, he was already being considered among the top quarterback group as it was. What did you get from him? Did he change your mind at all based on the numbers that you saw?
He didn't change my mind on the field.
Yeah.
At all. If you watched Anthony Richardson on the field this year, you knew that he was going to test extremely well, that he had great size, that he had an excellent arm, that when he took off, he could run with not only speed and elusiveness, which is sort of more of the quarterback game when running, but also power. He runs a little bit like Josh Allen. There's a couple of plays on tape where he's got three and four guys on him and he's still grinding for yards. Not really a quarterback feature in the run game typically. So you knew that Anthony Richardson had all the physical tools. There was a lot of talk about how well he did in interviews, which is huge because there were some question marks there. Again, I've never interviewed Anthony Richardson or people that work directly with him, so I have no insight into that part of the process, but there was a lot of smoke about how well Anthony Richardson did in rooms with teams. Of course, everybody's talking to him because he's in that top four of the quarterback class this year pretty easily. He has the highest ceiling. There's always that guy with the highest ceiling. Like, if it works, if the lottery ticket hits, who would be the biggest winner? And there's no question this year that guy is Anthony Richardson. For him to go into the combine, do extremely well behind closed doors, apparently, with teams, and then go out on the field and look like that. Like, he was smooth as silk. The arm was there, but we knew he had it. He ran extremely well. He broke the quarterback record for the vertical jump. Like, he set the world on fire for athletic testing, which was expected. But that other part, that combination,
right,
is going to stoke the fire hugely over the next 6 weeks as we approach the draft. People are going to look back and go, yeah, but did you see it? Like, did you see all that? And then we had our conversation with him. Are you not, like, do you want that in our division playing against us for those quarterback needy teams? And the answer is no. If Anthony Richardson hits, you do not want to see him on a football field.
Okay. And just if anybody hasn't seen the numbers, it was a 4.43 40-yard dash, a 40.5-inch vertical jump, a 10-foot, 9-inch broad jump, and with you being a Bears fan, EJ, I want to get your perspective on this because the Bears do have the number one overall pick. Where do you come out on this? Are you a trade Justin Fields for picks type of guy and pick the best quarterback available out of this class? Or do you not see anybody who piques your interest enough more than what you've seen from Justin Fields already?
It's a great question. And I'm not going to say nobody piques my interest, but I am going to say strongly, and for right now, Justin Fields is the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. He has earned that right, and he deserves a full year with a bunch of help. Because if you look at the supporting cast and the play calling from last year, there was no way he was going to win, and they didn't want him to. That's the real kicker. because you said the Chicago Bears have the number one overall pick, and I will put a big asterisk on that and say for now.
For now, right.
And it came out today. This was Ian Rappaport saying there is a flurry of interest to vault to number one. We knew that they were most likely going to trade the pick, and I agree with that. I believe Justin is an excellent quarterback, and I believe if he was in this quarterback class, he would be quarterback one, above Bryce Young, above CJ Stroud, his successor at Ohio State, even above Anthony Richardson in terms of polish and readiness. Ceiling? Hard not to say that Richardson has a higher ceiling, because I honestly don't know
hardly anyone that doesn't have
a higher ceiling than that. But is that enough to trade away a guy who is a leader, who is a worker, who is extremely smart, who has demonstrated on the field some truly, deeply impressive athletic gifts? I think you go out and get him all the help. And right now, this buzz is, yeah, we knew they were going to trade the pick, but people are starting to go, I got to go get it. And the buzz is that they're probably going to trade the first pick within the next 10 days.
Really?
Yes. And they're probably going to trade it to number two.
Oh.
And then they're going to open up the trading for number two.
Sure.
And if that happens, build the Ryan Poles statue right now. He will take the number one pick. He will turn it into a whole bunch of picks by turning it into the number two pick overall. And then he will do the whole thing all over again. And if that happens, Brandon, you will hear me scream at your house from here. Like, they will own everything for the next 2 years. They will have like four or five first round picks for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Plus two this year, plus. Like, it's going to be a haul of magnificent proportions. So you keep Justin Fields, because he has demonstrated that, yes, he has some areas to improve in, absolutely, but he is also elite at areas that you can't teach. Get him some help, and this draft will get him a lot of help. They already have a pick in every round. They've got the top overall pick. They have the most money in free agency. You keep Justin Fields, you add all of the stuff around him, and I do mean all of the stuff. You build a future cache of picks that is basically insurmountable. And then if it doesn't work out this year, here's the quiet whisper that nobody's talking about. If Justin Fields flames out, which I do not think he will, I truly believe he will succeed. If he flames out this year and you have five first round picks over the next 2 years, you go get Caleb Williams.
All right.
And that's your guy that can compete with Mahomes, Allen, right, Anthony Richardson, if he hits anybody, right? Caleb Williams is already that guy that whenever he comes out, everybody's going to sell everything they have to try and go get him. If Justin doesn't work out this year with all the help that he's going to have, and Caleb's there and you've got five first round picks, pull the trigger, do that, but give him his year. And I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised at how well he plays the position.
Well, the reason why this hype around Richardson is so important for the Seahawks is because I feel like we're really only talking about three quarterbacks in the top five, and Richardson maybe being outside of that top five until this combine. And now I feel like we're hearing him vaulting into that conversation more, which either allows a quarterback, and maybe it is even Richardson who would be there at five. I don't know, based off this last week, but you know, things happen between now and the draft as well. But just him being there means that the Seahawks either have another quarterback option at number five, or they have one of the top two, three defensive prospects available to them at number five. Well, it was going to be one of the top three probably anyway. The Jalen Carter news now this past week makes that questionable whether or not he'll slide at all. Again, there's still a lot of time for things to potentially get resolved between now and the draft. So it's just, with all this happening, do you think Richardson is the target now after this weekend?
It's tough to say he's the target. Is
for number
he
one?
Is he in the sights? Yes, he's in the sights. I mean, John Schneider came out and said they don't grow on trees, right?
Right.
Why would we be interested in a quarterback? And it's his job to say that, to gin up interest in their pick and everything else. He might have said to Gino behind closed doors, I doubt it, knowing John. But he might have said to him behind closed doors, hey, man, you're the guy. I got to go say the stuff. Don't worry about it. We're going to get your extension done. Like, you know, you're our guy. And that may be the thing. Like, make it a 2-year deal that is, you know, fully palatable. Then you bring Richardson into a tremendous situation where Geno is the established starter. You do not have to play. You can work on all the things, you know, the ones that remain. And then when Geno's deal's up in 2 years, which is not the, you know, end of the world, they have their starter in waiting. That is a luxury in the NFL. Very, very few teams have any kind of a succession plan that's anywhere near that. So it's possible. Is it the way I think they'll go? I don't think I will ever come on this show and say, I know what John Schneider's thinking in the draft, because he will zig when everybody else zags. But if he drums up enough interest and makes it real that the Seahawks could take Richardson and somebody really wants him and he is there at 5, then the Hawks get whatever they want to ask for.
Right. Well, and that's another reason why I thought it was nice that you brought in that Bears perspective too, because really building on the future, if you can trade that pick and get another first round pick next year, because there is that much interest to move up to that spot, I could see John Schneider taking a move back, still being in the top 10, maybe one of those defenders that they really like with, I mean, the edge class is deep, which I know is something that we've talked about and I think was confirmed even through some of the drills this weekend. So, yeah, it's just, there's a lot of different ways it can go. I'm trying to stay open-minded because of just how many different ways it can go.
Yeah, there are a lot of options, and there will be multiple permutations, tons of smoke, tons of false leads. They've already started. It's that season. It's lying season in the NFL. You can't believe any of it, but you can sort of read the tea leaves and say, all right, I'm Seattle. I have a need for impact defenders. That's pretty obvious. I have a quarterback situation that is almost settled. Like, we could settle it if we want to. You have to see whether or not they're going to do that. I believe that they should. I think you believe that they should. They might. They might not. It would be really nice to see Geno rewarded for what was an excellent, excellent season by any measure. And it would give them some continuity. His teammates obviously love him, and they won with him. So there's a piece of not upsetting the apple cart. But if you bring in somebody that's developmental and that pecking order is clear, hey, Geno, you're it for, you know, definitely next year, maybe the year after, and then a transition, that could be good. Or Schneider could sell it all and just get all the defenders. Bring me all the defenders and you know, set himself up for next year as well. He is a crafty guy in the draft, one of the craftiest, one of the sort of top flight wizards in the NFL, up there with Howie Roseman, with turning limited assets into, oh my God, how did you get all that stuff? And he's sitting in the catbird seat because he got a quarterback, basically, right, to work out the deal. He's got his needs, but it's not a single defined need. So nobody's really going to come up and pip him and say whatever, because he is known to go off script. So nobody can go, oh, the Seahawks are getting this guy, we got to trade above the Seahawks to get this guy. That's not John. John keeps all his options open. So it's going to be a fascinating ride the way to the finish.
And I mean, it's hard to disagree with the Seahawks fans who say, you got a top 5 pick. When's the next time you're going to have a pick that high? This could be the year to take quarterback with that many options available. So with that in mind, how would you rank out your top 5?
Oh, at QB?
Yeah.
I would say, depending on the flavor you like, it's Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. They are the leaders in this class. And the way I did my quarterback rankings last year, which was a first for me, and it actually felt really good, was a for now list. Like, if you need this guy to start this year, anytime this year, like first game, 8 games in, 12 games in, you need this guy to start this year, here's how I rank them.
Yeah.
And if I'm looking at that list, Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are at the top. And you might say, well, which one? I kind of think it doesn't matter. It depends on which flavor. If you're okay with Bryce Young's size, you probably take Bryce Young. If you are not okay with Bryce Young's side, you take CJ Stroud, and you feel really, really good about that because he's an excellent quarterback. So it's sort of pick your poison of those two. I would take Richardson next on that list. And yes, that's above Will Levis from Kentucky. because I think the ceiling's higher, and I think what you get right now is really close, if not a little bit tipped in Richardson's favor.
All right.
So if you're going to have better potential down the road and you've got roughly the same thing now, I would probably take Richardson over Levis. Now, if we switch to the other list I did, which was, hey, you got a little bit of time, which is presumably where the Seahawks are going to be.
Yeah.
They sign Geno, they get a year or two worth of breathing room minimum. They've got a little bit worth of time. It's hard not to put Richardson at the top of that list because, again, like I said, if that lottery ticket hits, he's the guy that can go toe-to-toe eventually with Mahomes or Allen or Burrow or any other quarterback super weapon because right. He's got all the tools. There isn't anything he can't do physically as a quarterback. Does he have to grow into that? Yes. Does he have to make good on that potential? Yes. But is that potential there? Yeah, in bucket loads. So, you know, if you're going to that eventually list, Richardson's on top of that. I might put Stroud a little bit above Bryce Young because I think Bryce Young's playing at his best. And that's really, really good. Like, let's not mince words about that. He is an excellent quarterback. If you can overlook the size, he's number one. He is a big game quarterback that plays very, very well. But it would be, you know, Stroud and Young sort of grouped at two and three. And then there might be somebody you like better than Levis. But again, Levis has great potential. And if he lands in the right situation, which I don't think is playing, you know, under the bright lights right away this year, I don't think you're going to see great results because rookie seasons for quarterbacks are always difficult. You know, but that's how it would kind of shake out, the for now list and the, hey, if you've got a little bit of space list.
So I'm hearing there's not a clear number five in your mind.
Oh boy. Number five. I'll go to my list real quick. It's difficult. I wouldn't say there is among teams. Sorry, too many lists open.
You could have just said no, and then we could have moved on, EJ.
I could have. Oh, for me, I actually think I would take Hendon Hooker. If I had, on the space list, he would be my four, which would make Levis my five.
Okay.
Because honestly, I should just say this because it's a Seahawks show. I love Hendon Hooker to the Hawks.
Really? Okay.
No, I like 100% love that move because he plays a lot like Geno at his best.
Okay.
And he's coming off injury and he wouldn't have to play this year. So again, on that, you've got a little bit of, like, there's nobody better for him to learn behind than Geno because his game is so close to Geno at the highest level, at Geno at the last season. Like, it almost looks like Geno reincarnated, you know, 10 years later, in a lot of ways. Some people worry about the age. Hendon Hooker's a really good quarterback. If he didn't have the injury, I think he would be the clear number four in this class.
Okay.
Again, for folks that like potential and they believe that they can, you know, file off the rough edges on Will Levis, yeah, maybe his ceiling's higher than Hooker, and he is younger for sure. He's bigger. But I really like the way Hendon Hooker plays, and I've thought more than once watching Hendon Hooker tape, man, this looks like Geno when he's cooking. Like, and if you can let him heal up a year and you don't have to force him onto the field and then make a decision, I really like that move. And he's a guy that would be available if Seattle decides to, again, slide back, take a defender. You know, I think Hendon Hooker's probably going to be back half of the first at this point, again, because everybody's, oh no, he's not going before the second. Well, that's possible. But again, supply and demand with quarterbacks. People will move up to get them. And somebody who, again, doesn't have to put him on the field this fall will go, man, that guy's tape's really good. I don't care if he's 25
years old. I always like how people pretend to know where they think a guy's going to get drafted. I always like to remind those people that DK Metcalf went at the end of the second round when everybody was saying, oh, he won't make it out of the top 15.
Well, I know this will hurt a little bit as a Seahawks fan, but where'd Fred Warner get drafted?
Right. Exactly.
Nobody knew Fred Warner was Fred Warner when he got drafted. No. And he went, and D'Amico Ryans got a hold of him in San Francisco and said, oh, dude, I got work for you. And now he's Fred Warner. He's probably going to the Hall of Fame. You know, if he keeps playing like he's playing, he's a Hall of Fame guy.
Yeah.
And
I don't think he was talked about, though, as being I'm mainly thinking of guys that are thought of as like top 15 guys. And
it goes either way. It does. Like guys it does that go. You are like, right, that's a first round guy, 100%. And there's only 31 slots this year. Normally there's 32, but there's a forfeited pick. So, I mean, there's going to be, and this happens every year. People say about 50 players are locks for the first round. Well, there's only 30 spots. Only 30 so 20 spots. Of them, almost the entire second round is not going to be there. So, you know, it's a fascinating question, but Hooker's a crazy evaluation because he's a really good quarterback. He's super polished. Both his receivers are getting drafted this year as well. So he had good targets to throw to. It's not one of those like, oh, he's got talent, but his supporting cast was terrible. His tackle's going to be a first round tackle. Like, it's, you know, so it's a very good offense, and you get a very clear picture of like, oh, that kind of pro offense, like those three guys, his tackle and both his wide receivers are going to be pros next fall. Like that's pretty much what we're getting. Yeah. That looks good. Like,
but Will Levis wished that he had tackles.
Will Levis wished he had tackles, and his top target left. Wandale Robinson went to the Giants. His running offensive back coordinator suspended. Left as well. So there's a...
he had some issues to deal with last year. Maybe go back and watch some 2021 tape.
I heard a funny quote from the combine about Will Levis wants to burn his 2022 tape as much as insert celebrity here wants to burn their illicit video that hit the internet. Because like, if you go back and look at him last year, I think his stock's even higher. And there are guys like that. Will Anderson, if Will Anderson comes out last year, he is the number one overall pick. Forget the quarterbacks last year. Will Anderson goes one with a bullet. Like, and this year, not so much, because again, there's quarterback need, and it's just how the draft shakes out. But last year, if Will Anderson comes out of Alabama, he was the best player in college football, period, at a premium position. He goes one, and then it's everybody else after that.
Well, there's one guy, I feel like, again, we're hitting some of the top highlights from the combine, and if we're going to do that, we got to talk 40 times. Michigan cornerback DJ Turner joins the 4-2-40 club. Pretty exclusive club there. Now, we only added one this year after three players made it last year. Kalen Barnes, Tyquan Thornton, and our own Tariq Woolen.
Yep.
And Turner's a guy who is generally projected as a day two guy. I know Tony Pauline had him in a first round in one of his pre-combine mock drafts. Does a 4-2 time, does that now put him in the first round solidly here going forward?
I don't think solidly, just like we said, in terms of, hey, there's 50 guys that everybody says, oh, they're first round lock. Let's just talk about Turner, the player. I love DJ Turner. He's a great player on tape. He is a great player. To me, he's got a little bit of Jair Alexander in his game, and that is a high compliment. The 4-2, it's flashy. It does show up on tape. He is really fast. I would have, if you had to make me guess pre-combine, I would have said like 4.33, which is still blazing fast. He's got good but not great size. He plays at or above his size, meaning he plays bigger than, you know, the sub 6 foot frame that he has. I really like him as a prospect. He is a very solid second round pick if you want him. And what that means is if you're at the end of the first round and you need a corner and there's been a run, DJ Turner starts looking really good because he's a solid player from a big time program. He's got all the physical skills you need, and he already plays with a very high level of skill. He could absolutely sneak into the back end of the first round. People forget every year that those bottom, like we'll just say like 8 picks are completely malleable. People go, I got to get this guy on day one. They trade up. People pick up a pick for next year. You know, people, there's been a run on whatever team 30 needed, and they go, well, look, I could have the 5th best edge rusher, or I could have the number one center. Well, you know, interior offensive linemen have the lowest bust rate in the first round. I think I'll take John Michael Schmitz, and John Michael Schmitz becomes a first rounder, right? And that bottom of the first round, say 8 to sometimes even 10 picks, is a complete crapshoot because of what happens above it, what's available, what teams at the bottom need, which are, again, the most successful teams in the league, right? They're filling holes. That's when, you know, the Chiefs took Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They took a running back in the first. Like, could the Buffalo Bills take Bijan Robinson if he's there? Mm-hmm. They sure could. Would it be a terrible move? Nah, it actually wouldn't. Like, Bijan's a hell of a player.
And the Bills need to stop running Josh Allen all the time.
and they could use him, right? So again, you might say, oh, no running backs in the first. Well, I kind of tend to believe that, but if you're the Bills and Bijan's there, is he the top player on your board? He probably is, like, because he's an exceptionally good football player. So that bottom eight is a complete crapshoot every year, and people talk about accuracy of first round mocks and all that. It's just such bunk because you never know what's going to happen above that. And teams get fussy. Owners get fussy. They're like, we need to make a splash. We need to sell tickets. We need to go get a Bijan, right? Or whatever. And so weird stuff happens in that, you know, if you don't believe me, just go back and look at the last like five drafts and look at like 28 to 32 should be enough, like 26 to 32. And you go, oh yeah, that guy's a first round. Weird. Like all these guys in the second round are better. And you're like, the talent evaluation evens out in most drafts as you get there.
And the player fit to a particular team plays a big role in that too. I do wonder what a player like Maryland cornerback Jakorian Bennett, maybe I didn't pronounce his first name correctly.
No, you got it. Okay. You nailed it.
Jakorian Bennett, he was the next fastest at corner and, well, next fastest overall. Had a 4.3 40, also had a 40.5-inch vertical, an 11.1-inch broad jump. He's just under that ideal arm length for the Seahawks. He has just under short 32-inch arms, but they've gone away from that before. I've seen him primarily as a fourth, fifth round guy. I think I've even seen him mock to the Seahawks. But again, does that kind of speed, does that bump him up? Or are you just not a guy who bumps guys up based off of exceptional combines?
I definitely bump guys up off exceptional combines, but not in the typical ways that people would think, right? And it's typically not off the 40 because there are 40s, even from this year, that aren't right. There are players who I know are faster than their times they ran at Indy for whatever reason. Maybe they slipped, maybe they were feeling under the weather, whatever. If I turn on the tape of player X and he ran a 4.87 and I see him running away from guys that are 4.6, 4.55, even sometimes, he's not a 4.9. Like I don't care what he ran on tape. He's generally faster than that.
Well, and with Bennett, I know a lot of people are saying they don't really see that makeup speed from him on tape either. So, you know, as you were saying,
again, where he's going to be playing,
yeah,
it's really interesting. Like, that guy is a break glass in case of nickel. Like, all you need to do is unwrap the bow and plug that guy in at nickel. He's going to be a nickel back. He's not going in the fourth or fifth round, I don't think. I think he is probably going in the back half of the third, maybe top half of the fourth. If you get that guy in the fifth round, there's something else probably going on. His medical wasn't great. His interview was terrible. Something on tape, is a very good player in the short area. He's super quick. He's pretty stout. You do see the speed, especially over the short area, the burst. Yeah. And for a lot of the routes he's going to be defending, that's great. There are certain defenses where the nickel has to carry the big slot deep one-on-one all the time. Those teams are not going to be as interested in him because he's not huge. He doesn't have the longest arms, and there's a question about long speed. But teams that play sort of a man match in the short zone where you got to be quick, you got to be on the ball, you got to be aggressive, you got to be solid, they're going to look at Corey Bennett and go, yeah, we play that guy tomorrow. Like, nickel is a very difficult role to play. I think it's probably the roughest role to play as a rookie because you have to do everything. You have to go forward and play the run because it's a new base. You have to support the run. If you don't, you're not going to play. Every route is a two-way go because you don't have a boundary to force somebody into, to push them to the sideline and use that as an extra defender. Anybody can break anything either way. And, you know, you've basically got four different directions you can go on any given play, and you have to pick right. And if you don't, it's probably going to be a big play. So nickel is a lot of pressure. There's a lot to learn. You're playing against some of the very best players. You know, CeeDee Lamb spends a lot of time in the slot. Like, if you're the nickel and your corners don't travel, your big outside corners don't travel, he's yours. And that's, you know, and a guy like him is yours every week. That's the difference between the pros and college. So, certain systems, Jakorian Bennett is going to be like a third round plug and play nickel. Like, and I like him on tape. I wasn't surprised that he ran fast. He looked great. in drills. There's a little bit of question about long speed. You see some of that on tape, but again, he was playing against, he had trouble in practice, I'll guarantee you, because the Maryland receivers are big and really fast. So he knows what he's doing with big and fast receivers. We'll see how he does in the pros.
You talk about the difficulty of that position, and I was pretty hard on Kobe Bryant this year because he just, I felt like he was one of the weaker links on the Seahawks defense, and it really wasn't that great of a defense overall, right?
Yep.
And you can say, yeah, you're only as strong as one of your weakest links. Cody Barton, he was targeted a lot on third down. Kobe Bryant targeted a lot on third down. And you guys released for Bootleg Football your defensive gems episode here this past weekend. And hearing you talk about Brian Branch, it got me a little bit excited. Is a guy like Brian Branch who could go, you know, around that 20th pick that the Seahawks have, would yep. that be enough of an upgrade to consider Branch that early?
If that happens, you should probably mute your mic and celebrate at high volumes.
Okay.
I'm not kidding. Brian Branch was my number one defensive gem this year for a reason. We don't really rank them, but I started with him for a reason. That guy is a tremendous football player. He is a great, great, great football player. And I say football player because he does a lot of things. They have him listed as a safety, played in the slot a lot for Alabama. He played the star position, which is their sort of roving force player slot coverage guy. And Branch did it all. And one of the things I said on that episode is it looks like three different guys when you watch his tape. He is incredibly disruptive around the line of scrimmage. Usually those guys, those really aggressive sort of heavy nickels that are blowing up screens and getting sacks off, you know, slot blitzes and all that stuff, aren't great when they turn on the pedal. When Brian Branch backpedals, he has high level cornerback skills. He probably should get paid as a corner. In fact, I was his agent. I would ensure that if he gets drafted, he gets drafted as a corner, because there's about $4 million difference between the tag for a corner and the tag for safety. And Brian Branch plays every bit like a cornerback when he's going backwards. But when he's going forwards, he looks like, you know, insert the force player from the slot out of UW for the last like 5 years, right? Elijah Molden, you know, last year it was the guy that went to Kansas City. Like, they always have that guy. Last year, Jalen Petre came out of Baylor, ended up getting drafted by the Texans. He was that guy. He's that guy that just blows up everything and plays with high energy. That's Branch. Like, but when he turns and runs, you see him making super high level plays on the ball, reaching up, batting stuff away, 20, 25 yards downfield, doesn't matter, slot, boundary, whatever. Super talented football player. I actually thought he was going to come in smaller. That was a thing. And even Brett said in that episode, like, he's kind of like a big nickel baloney. 6 foot, almost 200 pounds. Like, he's got great size. And everybody's like, oh, he's not that fast. Well, he ran a 4.5. That's fine,
right,
in the NFL. And with his amount of skill, his head gets him to the right place to maximize those physical gifts. There's a little piece of All-22 you'll see over and over again of him playing in the slot. Running back comes out on a wheel, and instead of getting caught up in the wash of the inside or the outside receiver coming in on the slant, he just goes, oh, I know where that guy's going, and cuts the angle and ends up directly at the catch point, turns around, plays the ball in the air at the high point. He's there before the, you know, running back. So it's like 4 or 5. Yeah, but he ran a straight line and the running back had to run this big loop. He's that smart. He's physical. He has all the skills going forward, going backward. If Brian Branch ends up as a Hawks defender, he might be the favorite safety on the team. And that's hard with Diggs back there. Like, Diggs is a fan favorite and with good reason. Jamal Adams does a lot of stuff when he's there and healthy. Brian Branch, within a short order, might be a fan favorite at whatever defensive back position they play him at, because he is a ridiculously good football player.
And that's why I have a hard time and why I had to pose the question the way I did, because you have so much depth really at the safety spot. Ryan Neal might be a guy that they want to bring back too. Mm-hmm. And it's really that Kobe Bryant spot. And the question of whether or not he'll improve enough going, you know, with the full NFL offseason, if you really need to target a position like that, with one of your first round picks when there's other needs on the team, on the interior, at linebacker. It's just, there's, yeah, you get excited about some of these players and you think, man, does it really make sense though when you have a need at center, when you have, you know, when there's a huge tight end class and maybe you can get one of the top tight ends at the back end of the first round. I watched one of my favorite things, the tweets that came out over the combine weekend was the tight end. Darnell Washington.
Yeah.
And he's like casually pushing the sled about six or seven yards down the field compared to other tight ends who are just struggling to push that sled 2 to 3 yards. Yeah. And it got me a little bit excited about Darnell Washington.
Washington is a fascinating player in this draft. Like, I love Darnell Washington because he's not really comparable. And the craziest thing is he's, for those that don't know, Darnell Washington, tight end out of Georgia, massive guy, almost 6'7", 6'6" or, you know, 6'6" and 6'10" or whatever. Like, he's big dude. Pretty close to 270 pounds, 264, 268 pounds, something like that. Moves like a much smaller guy. You'll see highlight tape of him hurdling guys. You'll see the highlight tape of him catching in the corner fade drill at the combine, just snaring a ball out of the air with one hand with that massive wingspan reach. Wasn't really used as a receiver. You look at the Georgia offense, he's the second best tight end on his team. Like, Brock Bowers is going to be probably TE1 next year. And so having a guy like Washington, who is a default sixth offensive lineman, is basically almost pound for pound and inch for inch Rob Gronkowski size. Like, he is Rob Gronkowski physically. But I would say he's even smoother than Gronkowski. And Gronkowski is a Hall of Fame player who could have been an offensive lineman if he added 20-ish pounds, you know, very easily. And I think would have been a Pro Bowler every year at offensive tackle. Like, that's how good Rob Gronkowski is as a blocker. Darnell Washington, again, has that power that he showed on the sled, but he's barely scratched the surface as a receiver because he's like the fourth or fifth option on Georgia's offense. There's just not that many balls to go around. So he got a few and they were highlights, but he has not been maximized. He has room to grow, which is crazy for a player of that size and skill. Not enough people are talking about Darnell Washington because there's just nobody like him. Like, you can't go get another one if you miss. And he's just going to be such a matchup nightmare because his presence in the game isn't going to signal run or pass. Like, if you leave him in there and he's a six offensive lineman, he's going to bury your linebacker. Like, let's be clear about that. And yet, if he does a little chip release, here's this 6'7" monster running down the seam with good speed who is athletic and can turn around and snare things at the top of the catch point. What do you do with that guy? Like, it's the ultimate kind of gross two-way go. You know, you're going to put Kobe Bryant on him? Okay, sure. Good luck. Like, and that goes for most teams in the league. There are very few people that can deal with that both ways.
Well, and that's why I keep have it. And again, this is draft crush season. Yes, Zay Flowers was my first one. We talked about Zay the last time you were on.
And now what did he do at the combine?
He did very well at the combine.
Yes, he sure did.
he may not be there when the Seahawks pick at 20, as it turns out. And that's maybe one of the reasons why I have to move on. But I also have to move on thinking with that idea of matchups. Yeah, the Seahawks could go get a third receiver in the draft. And yeah, you need a succession plan with Tyler Lockett getting up there in age. And yeah, maybe tight end isn't the biggest need because you have three dudes under contract with Colby Parkinson and Will. Yeah, I know you're a Colby guy. And yeah. And with Noah Fant. So yeah, with Will Dissly, do you really need to go draft tight end? Well, if it's one of the top guys available and if he's, you know, that much of a matchup nightmare, maybe you do go make that happen. And then as a Seahawks fan, you'd be okay with it.
Well, that's the thing with John, right? John's just sitting back going, you know, you can't see my cards. You know, I could draft Darnell Washington. I'll do it. And he might, because again, certainly fits the Seahawks tight end profile of like super big, sneaky athletic. He's not even sneaky athletic. He's just crazy. Super outright athletic.
Can block. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Like, again, and you add him to that room, like that is, that's probably the deepest tight end room in the league right then. Like, might not have the high end talent necessarily, but Washington could become that. But those four, like, come on, you got your speed guy, you got two big guys. Disley is super reliable, runs great routes. Like, that would be super fun. But John's just like, yeah, I'll do it. I'll stack one more on top of it. Or, hey, yeah, I could really use a third receiver. Guess what? There were 50 receivers at the combine. 5-0. 50.
That's crazy. Yeah. Like, yeah, and there's some dudes who couldn't even get an invite that probably deserved an invite. Yeah,
absolutely, they didn't. Or, you know, Brian Branch is sitting there, which he might not be at 20. But if he is,
right,
that's tremendous. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. Like, yes, we know he needs defensive weapons and he'll probably get some, but again, this edge class is super deep. You're going to get guys that contribute down in the third round that you typically wouldn't get at the back end of the first, because there are, you saw the times, you saw the sizes, like there are guys on guys in this edge class and they can't all, they literally don't all fit in the first two rounds because not everybody's going to pick edge, right? People are going to pick receiver and whatever else. You're going to find a guy hanging out there in the third and you're going to be like, he's still there.
He's still there when, like, in normal years,
he might be rotational for us anyways. Like, God, didn't he run like a 4.48 at 250 and have like 11 and a half sacks last year in a major conference? Yeah, sure. Grab that guy. Like, there are just so many guys in the tight end classes like that. The defensive back classes like that, the edge classes like that. And crazy enough, which again, the Seahawks don't need this, but the running back classes like that.
Yeah.
You're going to get guys in the fourth and fifth in the running back class who are capable starters. They're probably not going to start, but they could. And some of them will because of injury. And you'll be like, oh my God, that guy was a fifth rounder. And you're like, what do you do when there's 25 guys that can run the ball at a high level? Again, with running back not being considered a first round position, they're not even going to get picked in the first round. You're going to have probably your pick of the top running backs, maybe minus one, in the middle of the second.
Yeah.
Right. If you believe that Jahmyr Gibbs is your guy, he's going to be there in the top of the second, most likely, just because he's a running back. So,
well, of the guys who fit that running back profile, since we're here, Tank Bigsby, Chase Brown, Zach Charbonnet,
yep,
Teyon Evans, Evan Hull, any of those guys who you could see in that Seahawks range?
I absolutely. And like, Tank is a punishing runner. We knew he wasn't
better be super with that fast name. I mean, how do you grow up? I maybe Tank is
your running back and you know, Tank's your name, for sure. But if I'm picking one guy out of that group, I'm picking Zach Charbonnet out of UCLA. He could have come out last year. I think he probably would have gone higher. The running back class was good last year, but he would have been in the sort of top five back conversation last year pretty easily. We talked to his teammate Kyle Phillips about why he made that decision, and he said Zach wanted to go back and be the number one pick off the board. Well, Bijan got in the way of that, but Zach had a great last two seasons really, and he's being undervalued. Didn't run a crazy time, didn't expect him to run a crazy time, ran a fine time in the 4.5s. Like, Zach Charbonnet is a really, really good running back, and he might go in the third. Like, no fault of his. He just, again, nobody's going to get picked until the second at his position, and there are a lot of guys, and if you want a different flavor, Zach's a guy that can do everything. He's big. He can pass protect. He is an excellent runner. He is a one-cut-and-go type runner, which would really fit with a lot of what the Seahawks want. He is also a very capable pass catcher, and you're going to get the guy at the, like, probably like the end of the third, not because that's his talent level, but just because of the way the draft shakes out. So I would take Charbonnet first out of that group.
And so help me if I hear any complaining about taking a running back in the third round this year.
You shouldn't. And I mean, again, you got Kenneth Walker. So this is all from a position of strength because of last year's excellent draft. And, you know,
but
again,
there were complaints about Walker being taken at the top of the second.
We talked about this right after the draft, that there were a lot of fans, and I tried to dissuade those fears. I was like, no, this is worth it. This guy specifically is worth it. And a lot of people were like, eh. And then sure enough, when he gets a chance to carry the rock, like, people are like, oh man. And I'm like, right. That's what I was talking about.
That's why you take that guy.
Yeah, for sure.
EJ Snyder of Bootleg Football. EJ, I know we're going to have, there's so many areas that we didn't cover. We didn't cover edge. We didn't cover linebacker. There's a lot more to talk about, but you know, we've got weeks and weeks leading up to the draft. So I really appreciate you coming on after a busy, busy weekend. And I know you guys are going to be covering extensively the combine on Bootleg Football coming up.
Yeah, for sure. We're actually recording 10 Gems on Offense tomorrow afternoon. So it'll come out sometime midweek. 10 Gems, like you said, just came out on Saturday, sort of in the middle of the combine. And then we have a slate of guests for draft season. We have four folks who you will definitely recognize the name of, already slated, and another couple who are on the fence, but might join us. It's going to be a cavalcade of stars on Bootleg for the draft. We pick folks that we really enjoy their work. We think they're some of the leaders in their particular areas in terms of player evaluation, and they've been wanting to come on. We've had some of them on before, a few we haven't. We've got some new faces, and I can't wait to release the slate. It'll be maybe the end of this week when we get those last couple buttoned up or not. We'll release the first four or five that we have booked, because I'm jazzed. Like, these are some of my favorite people in the entire draft space. The fact that they would give us time and come on and share their thoughts about how they see this class is fascinating. And I can't, honestly, as a sort of learning nerd, I just can't wait to learn from them, because they're really, really smart and they're great. And that's why we like them in the first place. And I still have to kind of pinch myself occasionally. And they're like, they're going to come on your show? Yeah, they're coming on our show. Okay, cool.
Like, I pinch myself whenever you come on my show, EJ.
Oh, man. Are we having pancakes for breakfast? Because I smell butter.
EJ Snyder, be sure you subscribe to Bootleg Football out on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, you can support him on Patreon. A great way to get some additional content as well. I know, EJ, you got some stuff coming out here. Why don't you tease that a little bit? What do you have coming out on Patreon for exclusive patrons?
Yeah, if you're a Bootleg patron, A, you get our draft rankings. That's really the hook to become a Bootleg patron, is Brett and I both put out draft rankings at every position, top seven minimum for each position. Sometimes we go a little bit deeper because, hey, it's Bootleg and we can't help ourselves. We have some favorites. That all comes out pre-draft. But I'm going to be doing some things this year that I didn't do last year in terms of, like, we just finished the combine and there's always a list of guys at the combine that sort of catch my eye, that are going to be sort of first on my film list after the combine, after I've gone through like the top 125-ish that I've gone through. Like, who's next? Well, ooh, that guy ran really well at the combine. So I'm just going to put that list together and give it to all our patrons first, and let them take a look at it and sort of share that insight of what I saw when I went through the combine. So it's stuff like that. And then we have patron only meetups, virtual, of course, throughout draft season, to talk about what your favorite draft crush is, or ask us a question that you might not have been able to get over on social media. So there's things like that as well. But we can't thank those folks enough. The support that they give us really makes a lot of the sort of base level content we do at Bootleg possible.
And if you're having trouble finding EJ's Patreon page, you just go to getintheflock.com and you look under our memberships. You look under our membership list and you find the link to Bootleg Football. It's right there.
It's right there. Other great content providers helping other great content providers. We love it. It's a lot of fun. And Brandon, I can't thank you enough for having me on. It's a blast. You and I, we probably do like an hour and a half before the show and like 30 minutes after the show. And then in the middle we go, oh, we should hit record.
We should record a show.
And it's just that way every time. And I love it.
And I think with that, there's only one thing left to say. Go Hawks.